Okay, welcome to everyone to the OOR Architecture and API Workshop 13, New OOR Use Cases and Their Impact on the OOR Architecture. Session co-chairs are myself, Ken Baslovsky, and Todd Schneider. So today we have slides. So if you open up those slides, you'll see the first slide is the title slide. Let's move to slide number two is an abstract. In this slide, what I noticed in the last, just recently, this was actually, it was very recent, there were some sessions, including the Earth Sciences Ontology Antilog series, have highlighted some use cases, some new use cases for design and application of ontologies. So I think this is a good time to kind of review these use cases and look carefully at whether the OOR architecture as we have conceived it can support these use cases. It looks like there's some interesting things that have been brought out that we really have not sufficiently and have not adequately supported. One of these is that ontologies are nodularized. Okay, now we have discussed this in the past, but clearly the OOR does not really have adequate support for modularization, particularly because modules can have different versions. Another one that really was a striking one was that these versions may shift from one representation language to another over time. That was brought out at the Earth Sciences Ontolog session. And in fact, we've seen this in other cases before in the past. So it's definitely a consideration and not something that we currently support very well. Another interesting aspect is that ontology modules may be in different locations, ideally not just stored, but actually within an OOR instance. And one needs mappings between them. And one example use case will be coming up later is the fact that the same leaf concepts may be categorized in more than one way by different communities, and users would like to select the categorization. Another one that also came out was the there are lots of different visualizations for ontology elements, and so it would seem reasonable to have some way of mapping to a more domain-specific visualization. And of course, this also has to do with the different ontology representation languages, and that that's also a consideration. For example, if we have common logic ontologies, one would certainly need some way of mapping this to a visualization that we certainly don't have right now. Then going on to slide three, what I did was I extracted a few of the slides. I mean, there are lots of interesting slides in the Earth Sciences Ontolog session, but I tried to look through it and find a few that I thought would be particularly relevant for the OOR. The first one was the overall goal of the session last Thursday. There, they mentioned the idea of getting a better idea of the requirements, such as improved vocabularies structured by use cases. So definitely one of their goals was to try to find the use cases and then to use that to have a dialogue with ontologists to understand the issues and of course support those use cases. Moving on to slide four, the Richard Hooper presentation had this interesting slide. Is taxonomy important? So he said he was talking about how the users in that community, Earth Science community, are more interested in a control vocabulary and the leaf concepts than they were in the sort of higher level taxonomy. and that one would in fact, they in fact have multiple taxonomies for the same leaf concepts. So this is an interesting kind of configuration, kind of a user-decided configuration that would involve mapping, combining ontologies, but a different form of modularization. You usually think of modularizing an ontology this way, where the leaf concepts, so the leaf classes, are one module, and then the different taxonomies that go above them are different modules. From his point of view, interestingly, any logical taxonomy was acceptable for navigation, for what he was doing. Going to the next slide, the role of modularization. This was in the Peter Fox presentation.
Ken?
Yes?
I'm sorry to interrupt you here, but this leaf thingy has me confused here. By taxonomy, they just mean this arbitrary tree structure on terms?
Well, the idea is that these leaf concepts are kind of the most specific classes in the ontology.
I think the taxonomist will be offended if you use the word arbitrary.
Good.
They go through great
lengths. They're certainly not arbitrary.
Well, neither are they.
They're not arbitrary. What's going on is that you'll have the same leaf, sort of, you know, most specific classes, but you'll have different ways of, you know, classifying them, ways of going up to the, you know, the larger, more general classes. This has been true for a long time in biology.
Oh, I don't doubt that. But
that's, you know, commonplace there. It's interesting that now in earth sciences, they're seeing exactly the same thing that was seen a century ago in biology. So they're different domains seem to, you know, reach this conclusion at different points. As they start to get more sophisticated with their use of taxonomies and ontologies, they seem to start realizing that, well, there's certainly nothing arbitrary about these ontologies. There's definitely more than one.
Oh, yeah. No doubt that. But I'm okay, well, Peter, if I offended taxonomists, good. One of the goals of having an ontology is to make these relationships explicit. And to say that there are multiple taxonomies, I think, is a problem. The point is that they are taking one particular view of a domain. And unfortunately, that particular view, again, is not made explicit. So I think we would prefer to cajole them to use an ontological perspective and then select those relations that they think are more relevant for their particular pursuit. So I'm sorry to badger on about that, but I really don't like taxonomies. I just wanted to make sure I understood what was referring to, since I couldn't participate in this session. Thank you, Matt, Ken.
Oh, that's great. Very good. Very good point, Todd. Anyway, getting back to slide 5, one point that's kind of interesting there is a little farther down. Maintainability, especially modularization, is driving new expressivity needs. So he talked about the sort of evolution of ontology use in earth sciences, and he saw how even modest expressivity that they had challenged the tools at the time they were doing it, and they were constantly gauging the benefits of semantics, and they find that as they moved along, they kept wanting more expressivity. So moving on to slide 6, in the Santoro et al. Presentation, there were a couple of specific scenarios for the use of ontologies that are, I think, kind of useful for us. The here he was emphasizing the queries. They were attempting to find concepts. From their point of view, concepts correspond to variables in the various data sets that they had. And what they're trying to do is find the relevant concepts from all these various services, this set of federated semantic services, and then put together a query which is going to give the results that is that are desired. So this is a very interesting scenario. You really need to go look in more detail at the actual presentation to see the kind of architectures there that are going on there. But that there's definitely some interesting aspects of this that we need to consider in looking at how the OOR is going to serve this kind of community. Slide 7 has another scenario. This is a user-assisted query expansion. Again, the mentioned federated semantic repositories, where you select the concepts of interest. Presumably, when they say federated semantic repositories, they mean something like the OOR, which I believe SOCOP already has a repository, but presumably they would have more of these repositories. So anyway, then there's this process whereby you select the concepts, submit them to the catalog services, and then perform a smart aggregation. Slide 8, the Naikong Li et al. Were talking about going a level beyond even queries and actually doing workflows for decision making. By the way, in a number of these talks, not just this one but the previous one, they made this important point that currently people use natural language to describe what, you know, their concepts are, what their variables are. And they recognized in that field that this is really limiting. It's very hard to understand what that concept is because of the ambiguities of natural language, particularly if you use just, say, one or two words to express a particular concept. And they started to realize the usefulness of having ontologies as a source of very precise terminology. So instead of just writing down a word, you write down the URL for the concept in an ontology. So that was one, that's an interesting point that was made, and it's an interesting use case from our point of view of how these ontologies are actually used in practice. Anyway, on slide 8, the speaker talked about how ontologies are not just for conceptual clarity, though we love that, and for organizing things, but also decision support. So we actually have to deliver decision support for solving problems. So that's yet another very interesting use case from our point of view. Okay, so then I made a little... On slide 9, I went on to talk about how ontologies are software artifacts, and as a result, we have to be concerned about modularity, version control, import, configuration control. All of these are commonplace in software engineering. But ontologies are not the same as source code, and then let me take a look at some of the ways in which there's a difference, and that's where perhaps we can talk about the value added in the OOR. So one of these is version control. The problem with version control is that in software engineering context, version control is really not very semantic. They don't really consider the, you know, how the different versions are related to each other. Whereas in ontologies, we do have semantics. Versions have mappings to each other. They should be explicit, but they're often just implicit. And this brings out the point that we're still lacking a really consistent naming convention for the ontology versions. And then another important point is that different versions of the same ontology can use different representation languages. That was brought out at the Earth Sciences session. This is rarely the case for source code. I mean, it's really unusual. I don't think I've ever seen a case where somebody would have one version in Java and then proceed to go to C++ as the next version. That really would not take place. But that does, that is, that sort of thing does indeed take place in, for ontologies. Import. There are different kinds of import here. You can import the whole ontology or a module of the ontology. You can import a selected part of the ontology. You can import specific individual concepts. It's clear that there are different kinds of import that are going on. Furthermore, there's we have to consider the possibility of cross-language, meaning cross-representation language imports, which in practice are important, but at the moment we don't really have any support for it. Configuration control is another issue where you'd want to, this is where you get into issues like workflows and the decision making, and also this idea that you have leaf concepts with different taxonomies, where you pull out the leaf concepts from one place and you get the properties and the categorization from someplace else. And of course, workflow generation, the metadata can use different ontologies. Moving on to slide, I didn't skip one, did I? Let's see, that was slide 12. Slide 13 is visualization. That's another one. You see a lot of different visualizations of ontologies, and some ontologies like those in Common Logic don't have a natural visualization. So one would think that we really need some way of mapping concepts to visualization. And I would think that some kind of style sheet might be appropriate for this. And it would also help if in the OOR we had visualization plugins, which would differ from just having a software component because of the user interaction and the display aspects of visualization. Moving to slide 14.
Oh, Ken?
Yes?
Sorry to interrupt again. The visualization issue goes back to the cross or the multiple language issue. So in your visualization plugins, you talk about concepts, which we probably shouldn't use that term, but we will for now. If you have this thingy and it appears across multiple ontologies, which may be in different languages and have different, I don't know, leaf thingies or whatever, should we consider how that span of a single concept or class occurs across the multiple instances in the OOR?
Yeah, that's a big issue, I think.
Should we be concerned with visualization of such a thing at all?
Well, I think we should be concerned about that.
You realize we don't have any graphic artists on our team.
Yeah. Well, visualization is more than just graphic art. There's also...
Hold on. You know, why? It's about communication, right?
It is. One can have visualizations that use, like these tree diagrams that you often see in like IDEs. I mean, those are not kind of really graphic.
Sure they are.
I guess you could call them graphic, yeah.
But
it's not the same as the one where you have boxes and links between them and all that.
Well, most of those tree diagrams have little boxes and lines going between them that represent some sort of relationship. So
no, I'm talking about the more textual ones where you have where you can expand and contract the brand, you know, the you know what I mean?
Well,
like the navigation that you navigation windows that you have.
Those are graphics. People usually refer to them in some fashion like that. I don't distinguish much between this term graphics and visualization. though I could be missing something. Maybe
I see what you mean, but I'm just saying that we don't have to be graphic artists. You don't have to be graphic artists to come up with that kind of visualization.
Yeah, but graphic artists usually do a better job.
We don't have to already have the resources to recognize that they're important.
Yeah.
Either.
Right.
So, but I guess what I'm getting at is, in terms of visualization, what do we really mean? Or we're just going to leave that open, which I think probably is a better route.
Well, there's already a solution to this problem with, just ordinary web pages, which is this idea of style sheets. Presumably you could have a style sheet and you could have annotations within the ontology that suggest what kind of style should be used for a concept. And by concept, I include things like classes, instances, properties, right? And then, it's even more complex when you get to common logic. So you get to common logic, you have some axiom, and how do you visualize that? Well, you might be able to just annotate it and say, well, you visualize this as an is a relationship.
Yeah. Okay.
So if this would help solve the problem of how you do visualization of these languages like common logic that can't really do that right now. That was my suggestion there, that this is a use case that perhaps we haven't thought of too much.
You're right.
I'm not suggesting an actual solution. I'm just giving suggestions.
Okay.
We haven't, but obviously the BioPortal people have. The protege people have all along. Totally left out area that has not been touched. It's just that we haven't talked about it, maybe because some of the solutions are already in the bundle that we inherited from BioPortal.
I think they have some excellent ideas there for visualization. But probably what they don't have at this point is a kind of a general architecture for how one maps to those visualizations. They pretty much have hard-coded all of them.
They're not trying to address all the problems we are.
Right. So they have a completely different problem they're solving, and they solve it really well. What we have a different problem, because we're trying to deal with things on a more architectural level here and trying to solve the problem for many other communities. That makes it rather different from our point of view. But definitely everything that they have would just be, really very well suited to the things that we're doing. We just need to know how to map to it. Anyway, going to slide 14, mapping, of course, has always been an important issue, and that's already something that we have in the use cases. But it's we haven't really thought too much about how you map between different OR instances when you have a federated system. Or how you do mappings when you're, how does that interact with modularization? And how does that interact with versioning? In fact, the modules can have different versions, and these modules that have different versions are being mapped. The mappings can have different versions as well. So that starts to get really intricate. And I don't think we've come anywhere near coming up with any kind of architecture for that. And the fact is that many of the modularization is to a large extent still a research problem. So there aren't, in fact, any real solutions at this point, although we've certainly had a lot of work done. Michael Griniger has been doing a great job on that. And then, of course, this thing that was brought out is that leaf concepts may have multiple taxonomies, and it's, like I say, it's been well-known for a long time in biology. Fairly recently discovered in earth sciences. And these taxonomies may be maintained by different communities, And but they're not completely independent. They certainly will have overlap. And so you can't just simply say, okay, let's take these set of belief concepts and then choose some properties and categorization and taxonomies that go with it. It's going to be a little more complicated than that because these things do overlap. So anyway, that my last slide was just a summary. You know, these new use cases are emerging as ontologies are being used by these different communities. How can ontology repositories help support them? Okay, so that's all I have. Let's open the meeting up to discussion. Peter, is everybody off? Is everybody unmuted now?
Oh, I was double muted. Everyone is unmuted now. So if double muted, unmute yourself as well. Before we go into the open discussion, I had a couple of quick items that I would want to go through. Hang on just one moment. Now it reduces to just one. I'm looking at, let me go down.
Are you talking about 3EY7?
3E, it's 3EZN.
3EZN?
Yeah, 3E zebra. And okay, if you're on the shared screen. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I was looking at the agenda items.
Yeah, you're probably looking at the agenda ideas.
So
one of Ken and I and a bunch of other people like Michael Grinninger, Elisa Kendall, and Carol Geyer, Chad Ensing from Oasis, as well as the ICOM folks. I mean, which ICOM is the Oasis TC, which Ken is now a co-chair. The other co-chair is Eric Chan from Oracle. So a bunch of us have come together and are planning to extend the ontology-based standards work that came out of Ontology Summit 2009. One of the first activities we are planning to do is to showcase ICOM, which is now getting published as a community draft, whereby it is represented, besides in English, it's also represented in OWL and RDF, as well as XML and UML. So we would use that as an opportunity to rehash on the values of multiple representations, look into who is doing work in that direction, showcase a few of those, and then get the SDOs, the Oasis and OMG, already, but we're also trying to get ISO as well, and hopefully OR to support this initiative. The way we can see it is if standards have a representation in an ontology, and OR is the go-to repository where these ontologies get uploaded. I mean, that sort of opens up a whole new content area that we want to pursue. So what I'm bringing up is for this group to confirm that we want to support this initiative. And the rest is, I mean, we'll still go on. Michael, Ken, myself, and the rest of us will be working on this and bringing up the two upcoming sessions that have been planned. The first one is on October 25th, and the second one is on November 8th. So there will be two sessions at least for this year. Because past that, we will go into Ontology Summit season, and we'll probably give priority to summit events and maybe pick that up after the summit. So do we have any discussion? If not, then all I need is everyone to say yes, and then we say we had a meeting and we agreed OR will support this and we'll be one of the co-organizers.
Well, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ken.
Yeah, obviously I've been involved in this. I would definitely feel this was good.
It sounds good to me as well.
Okay, we're going to move ahead then. It'll be exciting. And hopefully we'll do some good to all concerned, and maybe between OASIS and OMG, hopefully ISO, some working group of ISO as well, we could also do some marketing splashes and things to move that agenda forward.
What
a good graphic artist, Elvis.
Graphic. One thing we really haven't done is decided exactly what is going to be covered at each of these sessions. We just have two placeholders right now.
Right. Yeah, we've just picked two dates. We still have to work out the details. But I can imagine, one of them is to show what they are, what are their values, and the other is to show what has been done and what tools are available and possibly discuss what tools can be developed to help move that forward. This is just going to be two beginning sessions that will open up more activities later. So.
Yeah, remember when I was talking about this at our meeting, I brought out that I mentioned two, and I guess Michael Gruninger mentioned, of course, yet another. There's, you can look at standards from the point of view of the metadata of the standard, in which case you're thinking of the standard to some degree as just being a document. So bibliographic type information.
Yes.
But then you can think of the standard as being expressed or at least represented in an ontology language. So that's a kind of a different point of view.
Yeah. But this letter one is the one that I have been focusing on.
Right, right. So that's another one. And then, of course, there's the mapping between these, between the various standards. And that could be at the level of the metadata, right, for the standard, as well as mapping between the ontology.
The content, yeah.
And the content itself.
Absolutely, yeah.
So the question is just which of those, well, I guess four different possible things we could look at.
Yeah, Michael has
covered
mentioned,
at each of these.
There were like 4 to 5. We definitely will reiterate them and explain what's our focus in.
I think it would be really good to make it clear which of these is our focus. If we put too many in, then it gets a little unfocused.
Right.
You have to remember that different individuals are going to be interested in different ones, different of these. So, you may get a very different audience at this session depending on which of these you emphasize.
Yep. Agree.
So I think that would be very helpful. And so we do need to make a decision about which of those we're going to be doing and when.
Yeah. And then if you ask me, then we will explain, like you just said, these various aspects of it, and then hopefully we'll focus on representation of a a spec document, a standards document in an ontology language. Focus specifically on that one.
That's the first session, for sure.
Yeah. And then I want to talk about tools, too, because OMG actually is developing sort of in that direction as well. And so besides ICOM, we'll probably also want to pick up an OMG use case scenario, or at least an OMG implementation that has done that, and maybe compare notes on how each is done. But that's not the discussion here. The discussion here is to say yes.
Well, no, I'm just wondering if Todd and Mike have any ideas about this.
About which now?
What we should emphasize and when of these various aspects.
Hmm.
Well, I posted some things in the notes. It was really kind of from the earlier discussion on the slides, but I think it kind of bears on the ICOM stuff. I've been looking a little bit at some of the WCC Providence work, and they cite something called Ferber, which comes out of the library science community, but has kind of a nice characterization of kind of more focused on documents, but what they distinguish between works, expressions, manifestations, and items, and various relationships between them, like abridgments and updates and things like that. And that might be a useful model for at least something to be aware of, you know, in looking at both OOR and also with ICOM. It seems to be quite well developed, and if you actually click on the vocabulary link, you can kind of see the range of relationships that they describe there.
This is something that I
stumbled upon recently, but it seems to be quite well thought out. I know Deb McGinnis, the students at RPI, have been working with this stuff.
Yeah, I've been aware of this for a while, and I looked at it as well as a possibility. In fact, I looked at this and I think three or four other, kind of bibliographic approaches. I mean, there's OMB, of course, and many others. Tried to understand the relationships between them and which ones might be best used in this context.
Doesn't the Library of Congress have a worked out system?
I think this is essentially it.
It's this here. I mean, it's a little unclear just what you mean by these concepts here. They have a kind of four levels of a work.
Right.
There's the,
so the Wikipedia page actually gives kind of a good example that describes it. You know, item is the actual sort of physical object, and partly this is to account for audiobooks or Kindle versions or physical books and things like that. But I would think of probably the ontology version of a standard as being another expression of that standard.
Well,
so
in that
itself.
There's stuff that it's a paper by Barry Smith on terminology for ontology or something like that, where he talks about some of these distinctions also, but of course from a philosophical perspective. And the question I then also have is, how does this relate to the paper that Nicola is working on about artifacts? Or is that just too far removed? I'm sensing a pattern here among all these things. And I realize there are different notes. I'm sorry, yes?
I haven't heard about Nicola's work, so it sounds like it certainly could be quite relevant.
I don't think he's published it yet. To keep fixing some things. It goes back to some work that Stefano and someone else from that from the gang over there did.
Mm-hmm.
But the same issues keep reoccurring in terms of the relationships between the various things. When it gets down to looking at these manifestations of our abstract efforts, I don't know how else to put it at this point.
Right. This work expression manifestation item. I don't know that any more than the first two, work and expression, would be relevant to an ontology. You don't usually physically print an ontology, although it's certainly possible.
Right. I think probably the question is if you use different changing representation, if that's fold way up at the level of the expression. I guess it probably is.
Well, then,
I mean, remember their point of view is they're looking at things like an old copy of the Bible, you know, the actual physical copy.
Mm-hmm.
That's really very interesting to people in libraries, but perhaps not so interesting to us.
In addition to actually maintaining the physical entity, they have to keep records of that physical entity and where it is and its state and all sorts of provenance issues in addition to the physical state.
Yeah, like who owns the physical copy?
Yeah, where the heck is it in the building?
Right, but even the relationships essentially at the work and expression level, you know, I think are potentially fairly rich.
So, can any of these notions be used recursively in terms of versioning for ontologies?
They sort of generically say that at every level you can have a kind of versioning.
Right, but in terms of artifacts and manifestations, are these notions similar in a recursive fashion, or is that a silly thought? Is somehow a version of an ontology, a manifestation of that ontology in some, I don't know, context? I'm stretching here.
No, they have properties at one of those levels, as well as links between the levels. And if you go to the Wikipedia page, you can see the links between the page, between the levels.
Which Wikipedia page? I went to the one Michael said. It just is there another one there?
Oh, Peter has the link.
Oh, sorry.
The second figure there has the relationship. And if you click on the vocabulary, it also has a rich set of relationships there.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Oh, it's...
Verb expression manifestation item.
So you see, the work is a kind of abstract notion.
Yeah.
You can't really look at it unless you have an expression of it. In fact, one might argue you have to actually have a manifestation. But I think manifestation starts getting into the physical object. Like, you know, what's on what page, you know, and things like that.
That's one type of manifestation. You could also think about someone giving a lecture. Though they haven't written anything down, they just could be just winging it. And that could be an expression of their work.
But the expression is where you express it within a particular representation language.
Like natural language? English?
Yeah, natural language or vowel.
Well, I think one of the issues that comes up is to the length of duration of that expression or that manifestation. Right, when we talk about the physical entities, we think of something having some endurance. as opposed to a more a constrained temporal aspect, i.e. speaking. But okay, that's going off.
Yeah,
okay.
It was getting a little off, but I mean, the point is that this is a good inspiration, a good, you know, a good thing to look at when we start thinking about how we do the organization of the ontologies and the ontology modules and so on in the OOR. So this is a very well developed conceptual framework.
Well, hold on, Ken. There's the I hate to say it, but there's the manifestation of the ontologies and or modules in the OOR, but then there's the representation of the relationships among those thingies, right? And how they actually get stored. Let's see, I'm missing something here. It sounded like there were a couple of ideas that were sort of mixed together there.
It would be nice to just simply, for the OOR, map these notions. So like a work is would be an ontology. An expression, say, would be one representation of that ontology in a language. A manifestation would be when we actually store it. So it's actually physically, stored in some database. So now it now has a manifestation.
I get what you're saying now. Okay, I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay, and then one can make copies of that, of what we've stored there. Each of them would be one item. But I'm not sure how useful that would be.
Right.
And some of the notions like revision and subsets and things like that, I think is why. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it's probably as much inspiration as something that could be used directly. But a set of terms like this for actually dealing with versions and subsets of ontologies would be helpful.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a helpful. Remember, these people are talking about experience with handling libraries for many centuries, millennia even. So definitely there's some something here we could take advantage of. All right, so yeah, we definitely are good.
Yeah, can I go
on the agenda?
Yeah, can I go on to my next summary item, although it's slightly premature. Remember last year we tried to get connected with the library science, I mean, this is convenient, actually, while we're talking about it, to the library science community, and we submitted a paper that didn't get accepted. Our opportunity is coming again this year. I told Ken already, I had a meeting with Denise Bedford, who is now sort of going to take care of the NCOS, the Network Knowledge Organization systems track in the next ASSIST conference. And essentially the NCOS people are the library scientists and those. And of course, Denise has at one point wanted to get involved and support OOR content, particularly content from that side of the community. So I have her commitment that she will put OOR on part of that conference agenda. In fact, I requested Denise to come talk about it at this meeting, although she then came back and say they aren't quite ready to announce something yet, but it's almost there. So let's wait up and And hopefully, I think later this year, our opportunity to get collaborative with the NCOS community will be coming. And of course, that has been one of our agendas in all our content development all along. So just want to announce this as a preview.
Okay. I'd be happy to be involved in that. I just, at the moment, have no idea what. I don't have any contact with Denise. I don't know what's going on with her.
Yeah, we'll find out. I mean, Denise promised she'll make a post to the Ontolog forum when they are about ready. Probably a call for paper or something.
Okay. So this is a meeting that's coming up you're talking about?
What?
Or is this a meeting that's about to occur?
I will have to, I mean, our conversation was quite sketchy. Actually will only know the detail when she announces it officially.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so that, you know, you just have to keep us informed about this, and hopefully we can put it on the agenda when we have more information.
I can almost barely hear you. I don't know if others are seeing the same thing.
No, I can hear Ken.
You can hear Ken well?
Yeah. Okay. But he always talks softly anyway.
I didn't realize you had difficulty hearing me. Is some problem with my connection?
If Todd doesn't have a problem, then it's some problem with my connection.
Oh,
what about you, Mike?
Mike,
I can hear. No, I can hear Ken pretty well.
Okay.
Ken, I have to go. Sorry about that. And as I mentioned in the email, next week, at least for the next eight Tuesdays. 8 weeks of Tuesdays. I'm be pretty busy on Tuesday, so I may not have any time to help out or participate. Thank you for doing all the work today.
Welcome. Okay, but if you have any ideas about architecture and how we could address these issues that I raised, please just send it to us.
Will do. Thank you. Ciao.
Ciao. Okay. So anyway, getting back to what I presented, as I said, the session, not just that one, but some previous ones, kind of highlighted the fact that there's some interesting use cases that would really distinguish the OOR from just a generic repository. But, you know, the issues that are raised are really difficult to deal with. I mean, modularization and mapping are still research topics. So, we should think about these issues perhaps more from an architectural standpoint rather than, detailed implementation. What is it about the architecture of the OOR that needs to be changed to address these kinds of issues, these kinds of use cases? That's basically what I'm asking now. And then once we have a really kind of coherent idea of how we can architect this, then we can start moving toward, using the BioPortal functionality, which is a pretty rich functionality, to try to implement what we're, what the OOR does, should do. So any thoughts about that? I guess we're now down just to Mike and Peter. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, so the BioPortal has the notion of views of ontology already, and I've been kind of curious to try it's still kind of work in progress, using those basically as the mechanism for dealing with modules. So I think it's a, at least an initial step toward addressing some of these issues, but we may be able to suggest some more general purpose mechanisms that might be helpful. I remember I was a little surprised, I think, at how much the metadata that they captured on the views, that they were almost, it was almost the same as what was captured for the ontologies rather than just being, say, subsets of the ontology. But I agree, you're right. I think thinking about working from use cases to the architectural implications and then the implementations on the specific platform makes sense.
They have this notion of a view, but how is a view defined?
It's essentially another document, essentially, or another set of class and property definitions. So it could be basically a subset of the ontology, or it could potentially be another representation of the ontology. So like having a overall view of an ontology and a owl view, for example. So it kind of merges those notions.
Oh. Can it be more than just a subset? Is it just a subset?
It isn't. Well, in a sense, it's its own document. So you really can have whatever relationship you wanted. I think the versioning is separate from the views. Although I think you can have version views as well. There's no sort of tight correlation between the views and the ontology itself. So it's not like you go and you sort of click and you say these are the 10 classes I want to include in this view or something like that. Which is a little bit more what I had expected when I first looked at it.
I see. Yeah, well, it's a good start. I mean, definitely an interesting concept architecturally. But there are a number of features of software development environments and software repositories which we really don't have, and it would seem to me reasonable to have it. The ability, for example, to form configurations, things like that.
Right.
Which, at the moment we don't have anything quite like that. I mean, we do, in fact, the mechanism, they have this really elaborate mechanism for building this making or building in software development environments. Of course, it's not clear what it means. Is there any concept of compiling an ontology? What would compilation mean?
Different knowledge representation systems may have a notion there if you're compiling it into a Wu language or something like that, but I think that's probably going to be more specific.
There is a concept of compile to like a Wu language. You can compile to programming languages. We've certainly done that in the ICOM work, where we compiled to JPA annotated Java. And then you can then, of course, take that Java code and compile it in the traditional sense of programming language compilation. So that's one thing we have actually been doing. But, that suggests that this idea of a build or a make actually makes sense for an ontology repository.
Yeah. Well, they also have the notion, and I think this is more sort of for usage tracking and market ranking, but they have a notion that a project can list the ontologies that it uses. So one potentially could adapt that mechanism for kind of having a, you know, list of ontologies that was associated with a given project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something at the start at least. But, you know, there's no real actions taken with those ontologies other than just listing them.
Right. And you really want tighter configuration management with identifying the specific versions and things that are known to work well together.
Yeah, versioning is, of course, very important, and that was brought out at the Earth Sciences, where they said that they were definitely doing a lot of sometimes very rapid development, you know, through numerous versions. And at some point they might even switch from one representation language to another. So they start out with just a taxonomy, and then they switch to OWL, and then, you know, maybe sometime in after a while they might even, you know, move to Common Logic. But so that's the kind of thing that was kind of brought out at the meeting, was this was what takes place as they evolve these ontologies.
I have a feeling that everyone is bringing those up as being issues that they have faced. No one have really said, oh, we finally solved that problem of versioning. I mean, it's a hard problem to solve.
It's definitely a hard problem to solve. But while it is hard to solve, that doesn't mean that we can't have an architecture which could support it once, you know, good solutions are available.
I agree.
So it's just we're just talking about the framework that one can have in the repository for it. And, you know, and as it being a research problem, presumably people will develop different solutions. There'll be more than one solution, and they could be inserted as plugins into a repository. So that's the level at which I'm thinking of it right now. I don't think we can think at any more detailed level than that. I get the impression that they are thinking about this, and they're adding architecturally things like views and projects in BioPortal. But it'd be useful if we could think about it in a more, you know, general sense, for more communities, rather than trying to solve the problem specifically for some needs in one community. I'm just opening that up for discussion. I'm not sure how we can address this. Can't obviously address it right now. But perhaps we can talk about how we should go, what we should do from now on. What can we do to try to address these architectural issues? Mike, you're definitely, you know, the expert on federation. What do you think in this regard?
I think it's adding some dimensions to what we were initially thinking about for federation. You know, it was more getting the, you know, multiple copies, you know, synchronized between different repositories. So I don't know if I think I probably need to go off and think about it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, one of the things I was hoping we would discuss a little in a little bit more detail is sort of, I mean, since now you're talking about new use cases, is the case of trying to work with UML and with XML and relational schemas. Relational database schemas. We did talk a little bit about that, but whether they have impact, I mean, they should, on our architecture and I guess more specifically, what needs to be implemented to get us there. Because I guess if we talk to the real content world rather than just the ivory towers of ontologists, then we need those.
Well, the OData group is they have a model for data. They basically do have a concept of what do they have there. They have entities and relationships, basically, entity sets. So they, in OData, they definitely have thought through, at least at some level, the semantics of the data that is stored in all the different ways the data is stored on you know, databases and other kinds of storage media. So that, you know, so that you can then express a schema. So they have a schema language for the data that's stored in a particular source. This is something that we really should think about, because this could be OData has potential for being a major API.
No, absolutely.
On the web. I mean, the amount of data stored in databases just totally dwarfs anything that's on the web, and the web itself is already huge. So even if every website was semantically annotated, it would still be small compared to all of the data that's out there.
And they say big data will dwarf that.
And big data goes beyond that even.
Right, right.
So, yeah, so we're looking at some fairly substantial things that are you know, emerging, this OData in particular. So,
yeah. So, Ken,
I'm actually on that TC and sort of monitoring what's taking place right now, but so far I haven't actually suggested to them whether their data model could be expressed in a more semantic way.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Are you planning to use OData as one of the exemplars in these two upcoming sessions?
I wasn't planning on that, no.
Okay.
Because I haven't actually...
Just curious.
I haven't actually done any kind of translation of it.
Oh, I thought you were going to, or no?
I plan to, but I don't think I'll have it in time.
Okay.
By the 25th.
Good to know.
No, it's just a question of timing. But there's something else in OData that might be interesting for us, and that is that they definitely do want to have semantic annotations, and they do talk about ontologies in the OData standard.
They do. That's good. Because in the original mission statement, they specifically say they're not going to talk about ontologies, actually.
Oh, they do.
They do now. That's good. That's really good.
They have brought it up, and it's a really minimal sort of thing. They're basically talking about schema.org.
Hmm.
That's the extent of what they mean by ontologies right now.
Okay.
But I definitely feel that they want a little more than that, and that they may be quite open to something like the OOR if there is a standard API for it.
Yep. Yeah. Keep working at that. I mean, don't scare them off.
Well, I have to be careful. I mean,
right. I mean, they have all the potentials to grow really big. I mean, the topic they're on, the players that are involved, and definitely we want to be engaged.
Right. I think if we just, you know, pitch ontologies as a mechanism for annotating, right, for annotation, then it fits really well with their framework. If, you know, if I try to suggest to them that data should be converted to RDF, I don't think that'll be...
No, we don't want that either. I guess we just pitch that this is the mechanism to provide clarity.
Right.
Whatever that means.
Well, you see that quite clearly in the earth sciences where they basically have tons of data stored in essentially relational databases or something, you know, similar to that. And, you know, they talk about their concepts as being variables. And what they need is a way of expressing what those variables are unambiguously. Well, that's pretty similar to what's going on at OData, after all.
This, I mean, actually, the earth sciences people, I mean, are one of the people who is slated to bring on the big data. I mean, all the sensor streams, observational data, the maps, I mean, all these are talking about huge, huge, huge volume of data.
Right, right. So if we pitch it reasonably well, I think we can, you know, we can get into that particular standard.
Yep.
But, you know, I do have to be careful not to scare them off. But one difficulty is, of course, the fact that we don't have a standard API. We're not a standard.
Okay, then let's develop one that is meaningful, that was properly thought through and proposed that.
Yeah, if we can come up with some simple way of saying, you know, here's how you, you know, look up a particular standard way of saying something, where you have a standard way of expressing things like versioning, so that naming becomes very important. And they would probably want that this interface to be a RESTful type interface. They may be very open to that kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe this collaborative effort, I mean, could spin off the development of a standard for ontologizing standards.
Well, I'm not as ambitious as ontologizing OData. That's not what I'm doing. I'm just trying to insert in one.
I said ontologizing standards, not ontologizing OData.
Right, right. Mike, you have something to say?
Well, I was going to say for the APIs, one emerging possibility might be the API for KDs that is coming out of OMG Ontology SIG. I think that's really just mostly kind of a set of requirements at this point. But you know, if that takes off, then actually having repository functions captured as part of that might work well.
Which group is this?
This is the ontology PSIG in OMG.
I missed the second word. Ontology what?
The special interest group in OMG.
There's an ontology PSIG?
Right. The P stands for platform. Just to distinguish the platform and domain. And one of the things that they've been drafting is a request for proposals for something called API for KDs, and they're looking at something particularly that can basically address OWL, Common Logic, and, you know, potentially UML as well. I guess it's probably more than potentially UML, since UML is close to the heart of OMG.
Yeah, this is the platform to engage OMG with. I mean, Elisa is very supportive. She knows her business, both sides. And then we actually have Richard Solis endorsement, as well as Laurent Lichia's endorsement from both OMG and Oasis, all the way to the very top. So,
well, let me see if I get this right. The OMG Ontology PSIG has an RFP for an API for Ontology artifacts?
Yes, right. I think it's probably, I haven't looked at it the last few months. I think it's probably a draft RFP that they've been developing.
A draft RFP. So I put this into the chat room so we can capture that.
Yeah, and since we already have the email thread going with Elisa Kendall and Soli on the routing, Ken, you might just ask and see what they come back with.
Yeah, well, I'm no longer very active with the OMG.
No, I mean be active on wearing your OOR ICOM hat. I mean in this joint conversation. Not as an OMG member, but as a principal in this new collaboration.
Right.
As so you know, one of the things actually, let's see, there's a link here at the bottom. It looks like they actually have updated their site on this recently. So let me put a couple of links there.
Dave, there is a. Do you have a link for them?
Yeah. So that's the PSIG itself.
Who's Roy Bell?
He's the guy who works for Radia. Oh, let's see. The bad news is the API for KB is still member private.
But we can always ask. You can always ask.
Right. And Evan Waller has actually been fairly involved in the API for KB as well.
OMG member. Am I still an OMG member?
Yes, Northeastern is an OMG member. You have corporate members, right?
I don't know.
They have corporate members, they have university and government members and nonprofits as well.
I'm definitely on their mailing list. I get all of that information.
Yeah, you should find out. I mean, I remember they mentioned that it's only a few hundred dollars for a university.
Yeah, the problem is that I can't go to these meetings.
Not until you are.
All their meetings are all face to face.
Yeah, ours tomorrow. They tend to have one of the meetings, I think, in the Boston area every year, but.
Yeah, I know, but
there's limitation. Yeah,
their emphasis on face-to-face meetings makes it really difficult for someone to be involved in their activities.
Right.
I don't think I have anything anymore that would allow me to get in there.
Okay, it's been a useful meeting.
Yeah, it's nice to hear about what's going on there, but, yeah. Who did you say Roy Bell is?
I've only met him a couple times, but he's been fairly involved in the Ontology SIG within OMG. So I'm trying to remember. I think he actually works with specifically with software-defined media. But I think Elisa knows him quite well.
Do you know him at all? Or do you suppose Todd knows him?
Exactly. Would he work close to Todd?
We should find out if Todd knows him. But anyway, yeah, we certainly know Elisa and Evan Wallace. Okay, well, anyway, it's time for us to adjourn.
Mm-hmm.
Very useful meeting.
I have one last question for Mike. Mike, next Tuesday, you and Michael is supposed to host a session, and then Michael will host another session with John Bateman on Thursday. If you look at the today's page at the very bottom, 3F19.
Hi, this is Mike. I'm back on, but I assume we're wrapping up anyway.
Yeah, we're wrapping up.
Yes. I was trying to ask you about next Tuesday. If you go to 3F19.
Yes. I'm not quite sure I remember what that was about.
It's mainly Michael. Yeah, because he was at Voice, and during Voice they talked about getting future submissions of papers to include ontologies, and if they're ontologies, maybe they could be hosted on OR or something like that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it would be content. It would be interesting. But you have been sort of a standing co-chair on content with Michael now. That's why your name shows up.
Okay.
But past that, I haven't heard back from Michael about this. If you're on the CL list, I mean, you notice, I mean, there's quite a bit of discussion on the September 20th session. And I did write to Michael once saying that you will have two sessions on the same week and think about it, and you never replied to me.
Okay, I'll try to follow up with him and see what...
Follow up with him, with me in the loop. Maybe you guys want to postpone that, or maybe Michael has all the pieces in place already, but let me know.
Okay, all right, that sounds good. I'm traveling the next couple of days as well, but I should be able to send an email out.
All right. Okay.
Thanks. Great. You guys. Good telecon.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Ken.
Okay. So, bye now.
Oh, bye.
Bye, everyone.